into the fire. The brave tried to get up, but it was all for naught. His blood poured out, weakening him, and he finally jerked his last and lay still. Preacher moved quickly. He scalped the buck and mutilated the body, just like he'd done with the renegade in the woods, then grabbed up the meat and slipped back into the timber. He left Hammer picketed deep in the timber with good graze and a bit of water, so's he wouldn't get restless. Preacher squatted down about a mile from the now still and bloody camp and ate the bear. Preacher silently apologized to the bear for its death, then complimented it for it being right tasty.
"Ah-ee!"
He heard the faint shout and knew that the bodies had been discovered. He smiled. Now the fun was really going to get good. They'd be coming at him hard now, with vengeance on their minds. He'd mutilated those two pretty bad, and to make matters worse, had killed them at night. That meant to their tribe that they'd forever wander the land, unable to attain the great beyond and rest in the land of plenty. Preacher finished the bear meat and wiped his hands on his buckskins. He wanted to belch, but was careful not to. He couldn't afford the noise. There were engines out yonder that were just as good in the timber as he was, and they'd be moving toward him at this very moment. He stood up slowly and carefully and listened for several heartbeats. He now had two war axes, having taken another one from the careless buck by the fire. He carefully shifted locations, moving as silently as death's own hand through the brush and timber. He came to a little fast-moving creek and followed it for a time, working his way north, staying just at the edge of the timber, just inside the wallowas. Preacher froze by a huge old tree as his ears picked up a very slight sound on the other side of the creek. He moved his eyes left and right. One brave. And he was a big one, much larger than the average engine. He made his silent way toward Preacher's location. Sensing the way the engine moved, Preacher felt he hadn't been spotted. The buck would have tensed slightly if he'd spotted Preacher. The engine stopped and stood tall and silent for a time, sniffing the air, probably, Preacher thought. For an engine and a non-engine smell different to those who have trained their blowers to tell the difference. The brave would have to get a lot closer than he was before Preacher dared make even the slightest motion. For at this distance, the renegade would disappear before Preacher could use knife or axe. He sure didn't want to risk a shot and have the whole damn bunch of them down on him. The renegade slowly turned his head, and in the very faint moonlight filtering through the trees, looked right at Preacher. 13. Preacher lowered his gaze to the brave's chest. He knew that looking directly at a person can sometimes bring to life a sense that ordinarily lies dormant. Preacher remained as still as the tree he stood by. He willed himself to be a part of the tree, to be as one with the earth. It worked for him most of the time. This time it didn't. With almost a silent cry of jubilation, the brave spotted him and jumped for the creek and a Preacher. Preacher stepped away from the tree and flung the war axe. The heavy head took the brave in the face, embedding in his skull. The renegade threw up his hands, dropping his own axe, and fell without a sound to the ground, landing on his back. "Pretty good axe," Preacher muttered, as he went to work mutilating the body with his knife. He scalped the Indian and stuffed the hair behind the wide leather belt that, for this night, replaced his bright sash. He worked the axe out of the Indian's skull and wiped the blood away on the dead man's leggings. Satisfied with his work, Preacher moved warily but quickly away from the death scene, working his way toward where he believed the main body of hostiles to be camped. He had left his rifle in the boot, for he did not want to be hampered by a long gun this night. He had his pistols. but this was a night for knife and axe. He moved through the brush and timber without a sound, walking a short distance and then stopping to listen, let his eyes sweep the terrain, and to sniff the air. A few hundred yards later, he smelled wood smoke. He stood silent for a moment, until he had pinpointed the location of the smoke. He turned to the west and moved toward the source of the smoke. He stopped and sank slowly to the ground on his belly when he saw that there were too many men around the fires for him to take on. Preacher was a brave man, but he wasn't stupid. He backed away from that camp and slipped around it, changing direction. He almost made a fatal mistake when he came to a clearing, then hesitated at the last second. Something just didn't seem right. Then his eyes found what his sixth sense had warned him about. Two men, standing just inside the timber on the other side of the tiny meadow, thick with grass and heady night fragrance of summer's flowers. White men, for an Indian would never have been so careless. Preacher waited to see just how impatient the sentries might turn out to be, and it wasn't a long wait. "This is stupid," he heard one say, the words carrying to Preacher plain. "I can't understand what in the hell we're on guard for." "Hell, don't ask me, 'cause I sure don't know," the other one replied, disgust in his voice. "Them movers sure ain't gonna try no attack, and Red Hand's done got the cayuses offen us. I think it's plumb ignorant being out here when we could be warm in our blankets. I left me a squaw on the payette to join this bunch. I want some pretty bangles to take back to her. We'll have our way with them mover women till we get tired of them a-whining and complaining and squalling, and then kill them and go through their possessions." What nice folks, Preacher thought. Just lovely. While they talked, Preacher took that time to move. He slowly circled the meadow and entered the timber, working his way up to within a few yards of the so-called sentries. "I'll be right back," one of the outlaws said. "Where you going?" He mumbled something in a low voice and stepped back into the timber, unbuttoning his trousers as he walked. He walked right into Preacher's big knife. Preacher lowered the throat-cut body to the ground and walked right up to the remaining sentry. "Took you long enough," the man said. "Now stand here and keep your eyes open whilst I..." "Die," Preacher finished the statement as he buried a war axe in the man's skull. He grabbed the man's shirt to prevent the body from thudding the ground and lowered the dead outlaw to the earth. He scalped both men and mutilated the bodies. Preacher figured he'd pushed his luck just about as far as he cared to push it this night. He began his walk back to Hammer. He was about halfway back to where he'd picketed his horse when he heard the first shout coming from way behind him. Someone had found the bodies of the two sentries. He immediately dropped down to the earth in some scrub bushes and waited for a few moments, curious to see what would come of this. "God damn you, Red Hand!" The shout came from not too far from where Preacher lay. The voice belonged to Bum. "I thought you told me you'd fixed it with the cayuses." "This is not cayuse work." Red Hand's voice was tight with anger, but still controlled. "I have the assurances of the warriors in this area that we are to be left alone." "Well, who else would be working this area?" Jack Harris asked. "Preacher," Moses said quietly. "He's amongst us, boys." "That ain't possible," Bum shouted. "He's good, but he ain't that good." "Aye!" The call pierced the night as the bodies of the Indians were found. The men began running toward the sound, and Preacher slipped out of the bushes and started toward his horse, circling wide of the timber where he'd left the dead Indians. Heading deeper into the timber, Preacher stopped when he caught movement just ahead of him. Two Indians running almost noiselessly through the timber, both of them carrying rifles. They ran past Reacher, not more than 20 feet from where he stood. No sooner had they jogged past, Preacher stepped out and continued on toward Hammer. A shot split the night far behind him.
"I got him,"
someone called. Preacher smiled as he walked. "You got one of your own, you fool," he thought. "What a pack of ninnies." He reached Hammer, swung into the saddle, and headed south, following an old game trail. When he felt he had put enough distance behind him, Preacher stopped and made a cold camp for the rest of the night. He went to sleep smiling, knowing there would be damn little sleeping in the camp of Bum and Red Hand for the remainder of this night. Preacher met the wagon train a few miles south of where the trail crossed the Powder. Two of Red Hand's warriors had made the mistake of trailing Preacher out of the Wallowas. He now had their scalps tied to Hammer's mane, in addition to the other scalps he'd taken.
"Whoa,"
Nighthawk said, spying the scalps. "You had an interesting night of it, did you not, Preacher?"
"Got right born there toward the last," Preacher replied. "Weren't no fun left to it fooling with Greenhorn, so as I pulled out. But I reckon I did leave them in some manner of disarray, I expect."
"What are those things?" Swift asked, riding up and pointing to Hammer's mane. A half a dozen others rode with him, including Edmund and Richard.
"Scalps, Swift. Human hair. The top knot, mostly. When I make war, I like to leave the enemy a little sign that it ain't nice to fool with Preacher."
"That's disgusting," a mover said.
"Actually," a mover said, "I have read where some historians believe the white man originated scalp and not the Indians. What say you about that, Preacher?"
Preacher shrugged his shoulders.
"Some tribes scalp, others don't. Most do. I expect scalping's been going on ever since the knife was invented. That's what I think. Swift, there's a right nice place to circle about 2 miles ahead. Circle 'em tight, 'cause we close to the action now. Keep everyone inside, and when folks got to leave the circle, have armed men with them at all times." The wagon master gave the mountain man a curt nod of his head and turned his horse. The others followed, except for Richard and Edmund.
"I think them scalps of yourn done irritated the man, Preacher,"
Dupree opined. "They cut again the grain of his Christian holdings."
"It's a barbaric practice, and I fail to see what you have accomplished by doing it,"
Edmund put his penny's worth in.
"Demoralization," Richard said.
"Do what?"
Beartooth asked, looking at the missionary.
"It lowers the morale of the enemy."
"Mo, do tell," the big mountain man said.
"Did that mean that Preacher done good?"
Richard noticed the twinkle in the man's eyes and sighed.
He held a strong suspicion that these mountain men were not nearly so ignorant as they would like others to believe. On more than one occasion, he had noticed lapses in their horrible grammar that led him to believe they were merely having a good time at the expense of others.
"I would have to say yes to that question."
"Wah!" Beartooth hollered. "You a hero again, Preacher?"
Dupree put a hand to his heart and proclaimed, "My hero."
"I think I am going to faint," Nighthawk lisped.
"I'm of a good mind just to shoot all of you," Preacher said, and rode off.
When the wagons had been circled and the women were busying themselves with preparing supper, the mountain men gathered at their own camp, as always away from the main body of movers, and talked.
"I think we'll have at least one full day of safe crossing," Dupree offered. "That'll put about half the wagons on each side of the Powder."
"That's the way I see it," Preacher concurred.
"Then when the men is busy on the second day, Bum and Red Hand will hit us, and they'll come a-fogging, boys. There ain't gonna be no feeler attacks. They'll try to make the first one do it."
"And there's a chance they could do it, too," Beartooth offered up the sobering thought. "We're gonna be spread pretty damn thin."
Everybody that can shoot is going to have to be well armed, Preacher said. We got weapons aplenty, so, Jim, you check each wagon for powder and shot. Dupree, see that every boy of age and the girls, too, if they can handle a gun and their parents allow it, is armed. Beartooth, you and Hawk check out the crossing at first light. He paused for a moment. I sure hope God looks down and smiles on fools, because we sure got a bunch gathered here, including us, he added. Red Hand and Bum were still livid over the dead that Preacher had left behind him. Some of Red Hand's renegades were very nervous about continuing with the plan of fight that lay ahead of them. Preacher's medicine was too good, they warned Red Hand. There will be other wagon trains. Plenty of them, so the talk goes. So why not wait? Let this one go on. Fools, cowards, old women, fops. Red Hand yelled at them, shaming them. Look around you. We are 200 strong. Preacher is but one man. The others with him are nothing. The whites in the train are not skilled fighters. They are women and small children. No. We attack as planned. He walked to Bum's side. This better work, outlaw. If the first day does not find us in control of the wagons, we will have men leaving us, both yours and mine. Your warriors thinking that Preacher's medicine is too strong, Red Hand. Red Hand stared hard at the man. His dark eyes were unreadable. Yes, he finally said. And maybe it is. He turned and walked away. Jack Harris had stood quietly and listened to the exchange. Now he felt he had to speak his mind. Bum, that took a hell of a man to do what Preacher done the other night, and an even better man to slip away once it was done. Some of the boys is right edgy, I got to say. Bum nodded his head. I think Preacher's even got Red Hand thinking about quitting. I don't think he'll quit. His honor's at stake now, but he's thinking on it. So is some of our people. You? Jack shook his head. No, not me. I'm in this till it's over, one way or the other. Way I see it, Preacher and all them others has got to die. If they was to get through and tell what they know about us, the army would be sure to send men in after us. And all that'd be waiting for us would be a rope. And that makes my neck hurt just thinking about it. Bum was sure in agreement with that. This time tomorrow, Jack, there'll be plenty of women and girls for us to be using. And a few of us will have gold aplenty to spend back east. Me, I'm gonna take my share and retire from this business. I'm gonna change my name and buy me a little business of some sort back across the muddy and settle down. Civilization is moving this way, and it's coming fast. 10 years from now, there'll be people all over this area. Jack doubted that. In fact, he doubted everything that Bum had just said. The man was an outlaw, and that was all he would ever be. He watched as Bum walked over to the small fire and poured a cup of coffee. Get out of this, his mind warned him. Pack your kit and saddle up and ride. But he knew he wouldn't do that. Knew he had to finish the wagon train and actually look down on Preacher's dead, bloated body. And the bodies of everyone on that train. He had a good thing going, this leading wagon trains to ambush. If anyone lived to talk about it, he'd be finished. What you pondering so heavy, Jack? Bum asked him. Jack forced a smile. Thinking about all them women on the train. We gonna have us a high old time for sure, the outlaw said with a grin. I can't hardly wait. Ride out. The words again popped into Jack's brain. He shook his head to clear it. He looked at his comrades, sitting and squatting and standing in small groups. They were filthy. Clothing hanging in rags, stinking and unshaven,
and ignorant. They were working 10 times harder being on the Dodge side of the law than they would holding down regular jobs.
Too late for that, Jack mused. He looked south. Tomorrow would tell the story. Tomorrow would either be feast or famine for them all. He touched the butt of a pistol. Tomorrow.
14. Preacher sat hammered just above the banks of the Powder, his eyes taking in everything around him. It was very peaceful, very serene, and very quiet. No birds sang or flew, and no other animal had been to the river for a drink in several hours, not that Preacher could tell. The silence was a dead giveaway.
Well, Hammer, he spoke to his horse. I reckon they just went and outsmarted themselves. I could figure maybe Bum being that stupid, but not an old firebrand like Red Hand. So I tell you what we're gonna do, old friend. He told his horse and then sat there for a time, chuckling. Yes, sirree, Hammer, he said as he lifted the reins. There's going to be some mighty mad outlaws and Injuns when they see what's happening over here.
Are you out of your mind? Swift yelled, jerking off his hat and throwing it on the ground. That's the craziest thing I ever heard of.
Not so crazy, Nighthawk said. Not perfect either. But it's a good plan.
Why? The wagon master demanded.
Make them come to us, Richard said.
Yes, I see. We can have the river on 2 sides of us. We have access to water that way, and our main force could be concentrated on the other 2 sides. Yes, we have ample supplies for an extended siege, and plenty of shot and powder. We can start gathering tall grass for the animals and keep them on short rations for a few days. I think it's a fine plan.
It was at this point that the river made a curve, much like an upside-down V. The river wide on both sides and narrow at the tip of the inverted V, where the trail crossed. Swift thought about Preacher's plan for a moment, then nodded his head.
It's better than us losing a lot of people.
He lifted his bugle and tooted on it. The wagons did not circle, but rather formed up into a long, rectangular, box-like fort, with the stock inside the box. Swift assigned young people to scoop up the mess the livestock would make. It was going to be close and odious, but all felt they could wait out the outlaws and Indians. Men went to work immediately cutting down small trees and clearing them of branches. The logs would be used first as barricades from bullets and arrows, then, if need be, to use in the building of rafts to cross the river. Although at this point, Preacher did not think rafting would be necessary. Across the river, Red Hand glared at Bum, his eyes hot with anger. It is far too early in the day to stop for nightfall. Why don't they begin crossing? Why do they stop and build fortifications?
I don't know, Bum lied, for he knew perfectly well what the movers were doing.
He had a sinking feeling in his guts that Preacher had won another round. The outlaws were slap out of supplies. They were out of coffee, beans, sugar, salt, flour, everything. They had planned on existing on the supplies taken from the wagon train. Now, he didn't know.
We've got to attack, Bum, Jack Harris said. We've got to attack now, man.
Yeah, Bull said. We let them movers get all set over there, and we'll never pry 'em loose from there. We're out of grub, Bum. We ain't got nothing to eat. And as soon as the shooting starts, there won't be even a rabbit within 5 miles of this place.
Bum was thoughtful for a moment.
Preacher's counting on that. He's counting on us sending people out on a hunt. 'Cause come the night, him and them other old boys down yonder's gonna slip out and circle round on all sides of us, waiting for a hunter to go out for a game. And that hunter ain't never gonna come back. God damn it.
To attack now would be folly, Red Hand said. We would have to cross several hundred yards of open land, then ford the river. They would pick us off as easily as stepping on a bug. If we wait until night, many of the new warriors who have joined us will not take part. They will not fight at night. He walked away to join a brave who was motioning to him. They talked for several moments, then Red Hand returned. We are out of food. He shrugged his muscular shoulders. Of course, Indians are accustomed to that. So what do you say now, Bum Kelly?
I don't know, the outlaw admitted.
Stalemate, Richard said, standing beside Preacher, Swift, and several others, as they looked toward the seemingly deserted timber across the river.
How long could we last? Melody asked.
Days, Preacher told her. The last two or three wouldn't be easy to take, 'cause the stock will be squalling for feed, but it'd be a discomfort to them whilst doing them no real harm.
Won't those thugs across the river go hunting for food?
A mover's wife asked. It was mid-morning of the second day camped by the river. No hostile action had been initiated by the other side, but all could see the thin tentacles of smoke from their campfires. Preacher smiled. Take a look around you, ma'am. You see Beartooth and Nighthawk and Trapper Jim or Dupree? Everybody turned their heads and looked.
No, Edmund said. Where are they?
Preacher pointed to the other side of the river as a horse came slowly walking up to the edge of the timber. A man was tied in the saddle. Using a spyglass, Swift could see the arrow still sticking out of the man's back.
He's been scalped, the wagon master said, and he's stiff in the saddle.
Yeah, Preacher said, and coming from that direction, I expect that's Beartooth's work. It's like I've been figuring. Them folks over yonder is getting hungry. They slap out of supplies. I expect they was counting on feeding off the supplies carried in this train. We done spoiled their plans, turned everything topsy-turvy. Now they sending out hunters, and them old friends of mine is sending the hunters back without their hair. He chuckled. The others looked at him strangely as he chuckled in dark humor. I do love it when a plan works out.
Will they attack, do you think?
A woman asked him.
They might. But if they do, it'll be a hard one, in the hopes they can take us on the first run. But more than likely, it'll just be a short attack to let us know they ain't forgot us, and they'll be waiting further on up the trail. If they had any sense, they'd go on and leave us be.
Preacher looked across the river. If he thought either one of the leaders would honor a flag of truce, he'd borrow a petticoat and wave it at them and palaver with them. But Bum had about as much honor as a stump, and Red Hand was even worse when it come to dealing with whites. Anyway, Preacher mused, that was just a dream. Red Hand could always drift back into the wilderness, but Bum's situation was a different one. He had to keep trying until he succeeded in stopping the wagon train cold and killing everyone in it. If the outlaw leader had had any foresight about him, he'd have had hunters out killing game and smoking and jerking the meat. But if, don't put a scrap of food in nobody's mouth. So what would I do if I was in Bum's place? Preacher thought. I'd pull out right now and get a lot of distance between this place and the next point of ambush, and I'd be hunting all the time. That's what I'd do. Preacher wound it up. Melody broke into his thoughts as he caught the last of her question.
What month is it?
July, the mover replied. Near the last, I think. I'll ask my wife. She's keeping a diary of our adventure. Adventure, Preacher thought sourly. Then he had to smile and shake his head and silently ask himself this. Why are you so sour about it?
You're damn sure a part of it.
Swift awakened him. They're crossing the river, Preacher, left and right. Preacher was fully awake and out of his blankets just about the time the words left his mouth. He looked up at the sky. It was cloudy, with no moon. Good night for it, he thought. Get everybody up and ready, buckets filled for flame arrows. The women can handle that. Have the men stand ready for a fight. Assign the younger kids to load weapons. Move! Preacher took his position by a wheel and stared into the darkness. He found him a target, albeit a long way off, and pulled the Hawken to his shoulder and let her bang. The man, he couldn't tell if it was an outlaw or a renegade, screamed once and fell face first into the river. A mover fired, and another scream was heard in the night, followed by a lot of fancy cussing and floundering around in the water. One Indian got close and Swift drilled him right through the brisket. The warrior hit the wet bank and lay still. "Damn red savages," he shouted. "Problem is," Preacher muttered under his breath, "they was here for us." Then he saw a hat that he remembered seeing miles back, long before he'd reached Fort Hall. He lifted his Hawken, sighted just under the brim of the hat, and gently squeezed the trigger. The big ball struck the outlaw smack between the eyes and tore out the back of his head. The man never knew what hit him.
"Adam's down and dead," a man called. "My God, the whole back of his head is blowed off." "Forward," Bum shouted. "Charge, men, charge."
A mover's wife said a very ugly word and cut loose with a shotgun. An outlaw began screaming in pain, the birdshot taking him in the face and neck, peppering him and blinding him in one eye. He began running toward the wagons, screaming in rage and hate. The mover's wife gave him another charge, this time at much closer range. The shot tore into his throat and knocked him off his boots. Hot, bright flames began dancing in the timber on the outlaw's side of the river.
"Somebody's burning our possessions," a man shouted. "Looky yonder."
He turned around and pointed. Richard leveled his rifle and shot the man in the ass.
"Wowie!"
the outlaw squalled and went running for the river. He jumped into the water and sat down, letting the cold river waters momentarily soothe his butt. Preacher grinned. His friends across the river had slipped in as soon as the outlaws had slipped out and fired their camps.
"God damn you, Preacher," Bum shouted.
Then he began shouting out all the things he'd do once he got his hands on Preacher.
"You want to fight me, Bum?" Preacher shouted back. "How about it, you yeller-bellied son of a bitch? Just you and me, winner take all."
Red Hand halted his men, flattening them out along the river's bank, safe from shot. "We will see what kind of man we have joined with," he told his people. The firing stopped. A half a dozen men, from Bum's Bunch and Red Hand's, had left to return to their burning camps, to salvage what they could and to see what had become of the guards, both white and red. All pretty well suspected they would find them dead. Bum didn't know what to say, but he knew he had better choose his words carefully, for to an Indian, even a renegade, a challenge was something not to be taken lightly. If he screwed this up, Red Hand would take his men and leave.
"I don't trust you, Preacher," Bum shouted from the night. "Sides, I ain't got nothing to gain from whooping your butt."
"True," Red Hand muttered. "There is that to be considered."
"You kill me, Bum. You got one less mountain man on this train."
Red Hand smiled grimly. "And there is that to be considered as well."
"You guarantee me when I kill you, your buddies will pull off from the train?"
"I can't speak for them, Bum, just for me. I tell you what, I'll make it a real sporting event. I'll fight two of you at once. You and that sorry damn Jack Harris.
Now, I can't see how you can refuse me that.
Nor can I, Red Hand said. If they do not fight him, I do not wish to ride with them any longer, a Kiowa renegade said. It is not good to be associated with cowards. Besides, I have thought for some time that there is a secret that Kelly is keeping from us.
What could it be?
I don't know, but he lies.
He has always lied. What is so different about this time?
The value of what is in the wagons.
Red Hand grew thoughtful. The Kiowa was right, of course. Bum had turned evasive each time Red Hand tried to question him about the wagon train. We will see what happens this night, he finally said.
It's some kind of trick, Bum, Jack Harris whispered hoarsely. Don't you be believing nothing that damn preacher has to say.
Yeah, I know, but if we don't fight him, we could see Red Hand and his bunch pull away. You know that, don't you?
Come on, Bum, Preacher yelled. How about it, Jack? Or are the both of you so damned yeller you got petticoats under your britches?
The Kiowa chuckled, and even Red Hand was forced to smile.
It's a trick, Red Hand, Bum yelled. It's nothing but a damn trick. Don't fall for it.
He is a coward, the Kiowa said. I am taking my followers and leaving. Now.
Wait. There is something in that wagon that is of great value. The white man's money, perhaps. If that is the case, we could use it to buy more guns and powder and shot. Think about that.
Bum Kelly is afraid of this man called Preacher.
Perhaps that is true. But Preacher is a man that any warrior would respect. Perhaps we are confusing respect with fear.
Red Hand knew he was telling a blatant lie. Bum Kelly was so afraid of Preacher he was probably pissing in his pants. But he wanted the Kiowa and his band to stay with the group.
Stay with us. When the time is right, we shall attack the wagon, seize the money, and kill Bum and his people.
The Kiowa nodded his head.
I like that. All right, I shall stay. But only if you give Bum to me. I have a thought that he will not die well.
Red Hand smiled in the night.
It is done, Preacher, he shouted. It is Red Hand.
What do you want, you damn renegade?
Preacher returned the shout.
Your ugliness is exceeded only by your ability to lie. We do not blame Bum for not taking your offer. Since you are not to be trusted, we can only believe that your offer is a trick. You are trying to split our forces and it will not work. Go to hell, Preacher.
Man never said he wasn't smart, Preacher muttered. Did you hear my words, Preacher?
Yeah, I hear you. You best break away from Kelly, Red Hand. You stay with that buzzard puke and he'll get you killed. You best think about that.
Buzzard puke, Bum shouted.
Then he began reiterating all the things he was going to do to Preacher once he got his hands on him. Many of the women in the wagons held their hands to their ears.
It's over now, Preacher said to Swift. See him slipping across the river. Ain't no use in shooting. They're out of range.
So we've bought some time, is that it?
That's about it. But we didn't lose nobody this night, and we can start crossing the river in the morning knowing we won't be attacked.
We should count our blessings for the small things, Edmund said, walking up.
Preacher glanced at him.
Way I look at it, staying alive ain't no small thing.
15. Pulled out last night and headed north, Dupree said, swinging down from the saddle and heading straight for the coffee pot. And they didn't even look back.
They gonna be a raggedy-ass bunch, Beartooth added, cause we sure made a mess out of their camps.
Clothes needed burning, Nighthawk said, speaking perfect English. Fleas and other crawling and jumping insects had infested the material.
Richard sighed as he listened to the man speak. Whenever he tried to engage the crow in conversation, the Indian resorted to grunting and broken phrases. "We left 6 more dead at the camps," Trapper Jim summed it up, "and they several bodies floating in the river." So our adversaries, while still quite formidable, have been drastically reduced in numbers, Richard said. Beartooth looked at Dupree.
"What the hell did he say?"
"Take heap many scalps," Nighthawk grunted, hiding his smile. "Count plenty coup."
"Oh, for pity's sake," Richard said, then stalked away.
The wagons began crossing the Powder that day, and by late afternoon of the next day, all were across, and the fording was accomplished with only one minor incident. Young Avery fell off his horse and very nearly drowned, because no one in the party would offer to help him. The young man and his father were universally despised among the settlers. Edmund saw what was happening and tossed the youth the end of a rope and dragged him out. "You didn't do nobody no favors," Preacher told him. "I couldn't just sit there and let the young man drown."
"I could."
Preacher lifted the reins and rode off. The wagons headed north by northwest, rolling through Thief Valley, then called Grand Ronde Valley, and that night camped close to the mountains. They found good water and plenty of good graze for the livestock. "Any of you folks ever tasted salmon?" Preacher asked a group of settlers. None had. "Not all cayuses is on the prod. We'll run into some friendly ones and I'll barter for fish. It's right tasty. I think you'll like it." Although it was summer, the weather was unpredictable in that area. When the movers awakened the next morning, they found the sky gray and the temperature hovering around the freezing mark.
"My God," Swift exclaimed. "Is it going to snow?"
"It might," Preacher told him. "Anything's possible in this country." On the fifth day after the failed attack by the Powder, Beartooth rode up to Preacher at the head of the column.
"Getting plumb boring, Preacher."
"I hope it stays that way." The huge mountain man grinned.
"Tell the truth, so does I. Nighthawk ought to be back today or tomorrow. Be right interesting to find out where Bum and Red Hand is planning on springing their next surprise."
"They've crossed the Columbia and is waiting for us up to the north." He smiled. "But they's in for a long wait, 'cause we ain't crossing the Columbia and heading north." Beartooth looked hard at him.
"What you got rambling around in that noggin of yourn, Preacher? We got to cross the Columbia, man."
"No, we don't. And we ain't gonna. We gonna raft these pilgrims across the fall and stay to the south side of the river."
"You've lost your mind, man. You can't take these damn wagons that away."
"I know a way, Beartooth. I spent 2 years out here, remember? I got a way all figured out in my mind. It's gonna be rough, but we can do it." Dupree had ridden up and was listening with amazement on his face. He shook his head.
"I know the way you're talking about, Preach. You're gonna be crossing the Sandy 4 times. You best think about that."
"The Sandy ain't nothing. Bum and Red Hand's got scouts watching the crossing, bet on that. They got people looking and waiting all over the north side of the river, so we'll stay to the south. By the time they figure out what's happened, we'll be so close to the fort, they daren't attack."
"Have you told Swift?"
"No. Hell, don't none of these movers know nothing about this country. When you're lost as a goose, you ain't got no choice in the matter. You got to follow the leader."
"But you said yourself there's gonna be scouts of Bums and Red Hands watching the fall,"
Beartooth protested.
"Sure they are. But we ain't crossing to the Deschutes there. We're going to cross further south."
"There ain't no damn place further south."
"Yes, there is." Dupree spoke the words softly.
"You're a damn fool, Preacher. You planning on taking these greenhorns through pure virgin country? It ain't never been done afore."
"That's what makes it so interesting,"
Preacher told him with a wide smile. "Do you realize we're going to have to build a damn road?" Beartooth asked. "The way you're talking about ain't nothing but a game trail."
"Yep.
These wagons ain't never going to stand the trip, Preacher."
"They'll stand it."
"You're a damn idiot."
"You want to quit?"
"I didn't say nothing about quitting. Did you hear me say anything about quitting, Dupree?"
"Nope."
"Fine," Preacher told him. "I'm glad all that's settled. Now you can quit your bitching. You know the way we're going, so put your thinking cap on and close your mouth. Start thinking of ways to make it easier."
The mountain man shook his head in exasperation.
"There ain't no easy way."
"Then we'll do it the hard way," he smiled. "And we'll be the first to do it." They crossed the Blues at its narrowest point and headed northwest. They camped at a spot that in the years to come would be called Emigrant Springs. Only a few miles north of the springs, Preacher turned the long line westward and headed for the Umatilla River.
"Normally," Preacher told Swift, "the Cayuse Indians would be real friendly. I've stayed with them many times and ate their food and slept in their teepees. Usually this country would be swarming with their horses, but as you can see, it's deserted. That means they've pulled them close to their villages and getting ready for war. That don't necessarily mean that they'll attack us. I know the head man, and he likes me, so that's a plus. Howsomever, there are a few minuses." Dupree smiled hugely and nodded his head.
"Sure are. Like a bunch of young bucks looking to impress the gals with scalps for one.
I thought you men knew the chief."
"Oh, we do. They probably wouldn't hurt us, but they might kill all of you."
"Comforting thought," Swift muttered. "But someday the Oregon Trail will be safe for all."
"Big Medicine Trail," Beartooth said. "That's what the Indians call it. Kind of hard for me to get used to calling it the Oregon Trail."
It turned cold and the winds began blowing. If the movers thought they'd seen winds on the empty prairies east of the mountains, this changed their minds. Anything that was not secured properly, right and tight, Preacher called it, was blown off and scattered all to hell and gone. So much canvas was ripped and torn that Preacher ordered it all taken off the ribs and stored until they were out of the wind. They lost half a day trying to round up the livestock that had drifted, trying to find comfort from the cold winds, and two very difficult days later, during which the wagon train managed to cover only a few miles each day, another birth was recorded on the trail. It was a very long and hard birthing, and the woman's screaming was a nerve-wracking thing for all to hear. The mother had never been very strong, and shortly after the birthing, the woman died. The husband refused to accept the baby, a little girl, blaming the child for the mother's death. She was given to the Ellsworth woman to care for. The mover flatly refused to go any further. No amount of coaxing would change his mind. He flung himself across the mound of earth that covered his young wife and wailed out his grief.
"Raining too damn hard to move anyways," Preacher said. "We'll just stay here and wait it out. Maybe that feller'll get over his grief come a new dawning."
Just before a cold and rainy dawn would break, a single pistol shot brought the sleepers out of their blankets.
"I bet I know what that was," Preacher said.
"Yeah," Dupree said. "I sure wouldn't bet again you." The young widower had stuck the barrel of a pistol in his mouth and pulled the trigger, blowing out the back of his head. He lay sprawled across his wife's grave.
"Get some shovels," Preacher said, disgust in his voice. "Be easier digging up this fresh grave and just laying him beside his wife."
"I figure that's the way he'd want it."
"That's sacrilege, sir," Edmund objected.
"Oh, shut up. Don't get up in my face, Edmund. Not now. I'll hurt you, boy,"
Preacher told him, then turned his back and stalked off. Any man who'd shoot himself over a damn woman is a fool. Anybody who'd shoot theyselves over just about anything's a damn fool. Life is for the living, 'cause when you're dead, you're dead a long time.
I've never known a man that hard, Richard said, rainwater dripping off the wide brim of his hat.
Hard country, Bible shouter, Beartooth told him. This country feeds on weaklings. I expect the day will come when this trail is lined with graves, from beginning to end. 3 months after they're planted, won't be no trace of them. You best get used to it.
He walked off to join Preacher. Dig up the grave and bury Jacob beside his wife, Swift ordered. He sighed, steam fogging his breath. It probably won't be the last one we'll bury before we reach our destination. I'm beginning to wonder if it's all worth it. A mover spoke the words to no one in particular. No one responded to his words. The men just picked up shovels and began digging in the rain-soaked mound of earth. 16. The wagon train moved on, leaving behind them a lonely grave and the box of a wagon. The young couple's meager possessions were given to those most in need. The wheels taken for spares, and the canvas given to a family who had lost theirs in the high winds. They averaged about 8 miles a day, the men having to literally hack a road out of the narrow trail using axes and pure sweat and muscle. When they reached the Umatilla River, two families announced they were leaving the train and heading northeast, toward the Walla Walla, to make their homes near the new Whitman Mission. They simply could not or would not endure the trail any longer. No one tried to dissuade them. Most of the movers were just too damn tired to care. The wagon train rolled on, with not one hostile Indian being seen. Nighthawk had reported that Bum and Red Hand had spread their people out north of the Columbia, in the wilderness, along the Klickitat River.
Just like I figured, Preacher said. Time they figure out that we didn't cross the Columbia at the Dalles, and we'll be so far into the Southern Cascades they'll never find us.
And as Preacher had predicted, when the train did meet up with some cayuses, they were friendly. Preacher bartered for enough fresh salmon to give everyone on the train a good meal, and learned that only a few of the tribe had taken to the warpath. Those that had were operating, for the most part, north of the Columbia. But the cayuses shook their heads and made the sign of a crazy person when they learned that Preacher was going to take the wagons across the mountains south of the river.
It cannot be done, a sub-chief told Swift. That is impossible.
It ain't never been done, Preacher corrected the wagon master. But that don't mean it can't be done. Preacher talked long with the sub-chief, and the man inspected the gee-gaws in the trade wagon driven by Jim. After 2 hours of palavering, the men solemnly shook hands.
What was all that about? Richard asked.
They're gonna help us cross the Deschutes, Preacher told him. I gave him everything in the wagon, and the wagon. That'll be one less we got to pull across the mountains, and it'll give us an extra team.
But that river is miles and days away, Swift objected. How do you know these savages will be there?
'Cause they gave their word to me, and we ain't never lied to one another, that's why. Move out, Swift, he pointed. The promised land is that away.
Jim was grateful to be shed of the wagon and back in the saddle. But like the other mountain men, he had his doubts about getting a wagon train through the Cascades.
There ain't much feed in there for the livestock, Preacher, he reminded the man.
That's true in spots.
Mighty boggy in there, old hoss, Dupree added.
Yep, in spots.
Rope was getting raggedy, Beartooth said.
and we gonna have to sure use them for snubbing these wagons and lowering down them mighty steep passageways.
Once we get them built, Preacher said. Nighthawk shook his head at that. He said.
Great God in heaven, Swift said, taking his first look at the Deschutes.
We'll never get the wagons across that.
We'll get them across, Preacher told him. Get your people building rafts. This part's the easy part. Once we get crossed is when the fun starts. The crossing was made, but it was not done without loss. Several head of livestock were drowned in the river, and several wagons were lost when the ropes on a raft parted and the raft came apart. Since possessions were rafted across separately, the movers' goods were dispersed among other wagons and the pioneers could ride the mules. Preacher bartered with the cayuses for saddles. He did not ask where they got them, although he had a pretty good idea. And one mover's wife shocked the entire train by putting on a pair of her husband's breeches and riding the mule astride.
Disgraceful, several of the women said. How common can a person get?
Seemed like a pretty good idea to me, was the opinion of most of the other women. No woman of mine would ever wear breeches, a mover made the mistake of saying. And 10 minutes later, his wife emerged from their wagon wearing a pair of his breeches.
You got something to say about this? She challenged him.
No, dear, he said meekly. Melody and Penelope looked at one another and smiled. Moments later, they had changed from their now somewhat less than elegant riding habits into breeches. Dupree took a long look at the derrières of the ladies, threw his hands up into the air and proclaimed,
C'est bon, magnifique.
Preacher had spent weeks looking at their derrières. He had nothing to say.
Here now, Swift said, eyeballing the breeches-clad ladies. I'll have none of this on my train. You women get back into proper clothing.
Make us.
Melody threw down the challenge. Swift muttered under his breath and walked away.
I'm telling you for a fact, Preacher said. I can see the day coming when women is gonna have the vote.
Never,
Beartooth said. Of course, he added, scratching his woolly mane.
I ain't never voted, so I reckon it wouldn't make no difference nohow.
On the morning the train was to pull out, Preacher told Swift,
We gotta get over the mountains before the snow flies, and she can fly early out here.
This ain't gonna be easy. I'm warning you of that right now, but I said I'd get you through, and I'm going to do just that. So toot on that bugle of yourn, Swift, and let's tackle the last leg. Swift smiled at him. Tell you the truth, Preacher, I'm getting just about as sick of that damn bugle as you are. The two men laughed, clasped each other on the shoulder, and walked off together toward their horses. And while they had no way of knowing it, both of them were destined for the pages of a few history books. They would be the first to lead a wagon train over the rugged Cascades Mountains. But since that claim would always be in dispute, it would be taken out of the history books. Taken out long before the mass migration of the late 40s and early 50s. When Preacher was told of this, he wasn't surprised, since he wasn't aware it was even in any books. His reply was typical. Hell, I don't read about history, Pilgrim. I make it.
Book 3 1 O beautiful for spacious skies, for amber waves of grain, for purple mountain majesties above the fruited plain. America, America, God shed his grace on thee, and crown thy good with brotherhood from sea to shining sea. Catherine Lee Bates.
We're going to have about 2.5 days of fairly easy travel, Preacher told Swift and a few others
after they broke for lunch. Then you got to lighten the wagons, and I mean discard everything that ain't absolutely necessary. The folks ain't gonna like it, I know that, but it has to be. You think going through the South Pass of the Rockies was bad? Wait till you see Hood and what's all around it. Swift nodded. I'll tell them. Don't just tell them. Stand right there until they do it. We're a-fixin' to go straight up and then straight down, half the time right into a bog, and we'll be doing it over and over and over again. Most beautifulest and god-awfulest country you ever will see. Start shaking down the movers, Swift. On the second day after crossing the river, the train came into a series of hills, long, steep hills. That night, the movers began throwing possessions away in earnest. There was a lot of crying and fussing over many things that were being dumped by the trail. But in the end, the wagons were lightened considerably. Preacher told them to stay in camp the next day and dump some more out of the wagons. You just don't know what you're fixing to get into, folks. But I do. You'll kill them oxen trying to get all this crap over the trail. The mules will just not move once they figure out they can't pull it. Dump more, people. Get busy lighting them wagons.
Is it really this bad, Preacher? Richard asked. The people are very upset.
I can't make it sound as bad as it really is, Preacher told him. It don't make me feel like no big man making folks throw away things I know they toted what must seem like halfway around the world. But it's either that or they break down or their oxen dies in the middle of the Cascades and they walk out with nothing. Think about that.
All right, Preacher, the missionary said, reluctance in his voice.
Richard, have the movers wash their wagons to get all the dried mud off. You'd be surprised how much weight is just a-hanging on them wagons.
Yes, you're right, of course.
Preacher found the lady who was keeping a journal of her adventures and asked her if she was still keeping her notes up. She assured him that she certainly was. Well, ma'am, I hope you got lots of paper and ink and quills, he told her, because you sure got a lot of scratching and scribbling to do over the next month or so. She smiled at him.
Would you like to see what I have written about you, Mr. Preacher?
No, ma'am. Preacher's reply was quick. This trip's been depressing enough without my doing that. The movers hit a dense forest of pine, fir, and redwood. Many of the redwoods soared several hundred feet into the air. On the first day after entering the Cascades, the wagon train traveled only 3 miles. The movers fell into their blankets and went to sleep exhausted after a day of cutting and dragging trees out of the way. The trail they hacked out of the wilderness was a narrow one, just wide enough for a single wagon. Fallen trees had to be dragged out of the way. Huge rocks and jutting roots had to be first hacked at and then dug out. The only graze for the livestock was swamp grass. Preacher warned them that only a few miles further they would encounter laurel, and if the livestock ate it, they would die. Lowering wagons down mountainsides by snubbing ropes to trees became commonplace for these pioneers, and they were all working harder than they ever had in their lives. They no longer asked themselves if it was worth it. They were afraid of what their answer might be. Mothers put ropes around the waists of their children and led them single file to prevent a small child from running into the thick tangle of vegetation that grew all around them. Any child lost in there would more than likely stay lost, forever. They worked their way uphill more than half a mile high, and then half a mile down the other side. That took a full day of brutally hard work, both for humans and animals. Slipping and sliding and cussing, most went to their blankets without even eating the evening meal. They were too exhausted to eat. But now, Beartooth said,
I reckon Red Hand and Bum will know that we didn't come across the Columbia, and they'll be hard on following the trail we're blazing."
Preacher nodded his head in agreement and accepted a cup of coffee from Nighthawk.
"Won't do 'em no good." He smiled and winked at his old friend. "You know where we are, don't you, Bear?"
"Tell the truth, I ain't rightly sure."
5 more days and we'll hit the valley."
Beartooth stared hard at his friend. Then the huge mountain man's face brightened under his beard and his eyes twinkled.
"By the Lord, we've done the impossible, preacher."
"Looks that way, old hoss."
"You going to tell the movers?" Jim asked.
"No. I do that and they'll get all anxious and in a hurry and somebody'll get hurt in haste. We've made better time than I figured we would. I got to hand it to these folks. They got grit. I'll give them that.
I got me a hunch that when they cross the last ridge and stand looking down into the valley, they'll give up any plans of going north across the Columbia and just settle right there," Dupree said. "I know a little something about farming, and that's good land for it. Damn sure rain's enough," he added.
"We'll be hitting that in a couple of days, I figure," Preacher said. "But the worst is behind us. What you gonna do when we get these pilgrims to the promised land?"
Beartooth asked him.
"Loaf for a couple of days, then head back east to the mountains. I got me a little task to do."
"And what might that be, Preacher?" Dupree asked.
Beartooth, Jim, and Nighthawk all grinned at one another. "I got me a score to settle with a feller named Bum and an Injun named Red Hand. You boys can come along if you like."
"Well, my goodness gracious," Beartooth said. "Thank you kindly for the invite. I allow as to how I might just do that. How about you boys?"
"I wouldn't miss it for the world," Jim said. "I'd feel left out by not going along. How about you, Nighthawk?"
Many of the rogue Indians that had joined Red Hand had now left him. It was obvious to all that Preacher had tricked them and taken the southern route across the Cascades. Even the most stupid among them knew that to attempt to follow would amount to naught. By the time they recrossed the river and picked up the trail of the wagon train, the movers would be across the mountains and into the valley. To attack a wagon train that close to the fort would be very foolhardy. Even many of Red Hand's own band had given up in disgust and headed back to more familiar ground. Bum's band of trash and outlaws had shrunk to about 25. On a cool early autumn morning, Bum watched as Red Hand and his people saddled up and broke camp. He walked over to the renegade.
"Given up?" the outlaw asked.
"There will be another time," the Indian said. "To pursue now would be pointless. We ride back east."
"Mind if me and my boys ride with you?"
"Do as you wish." He swung into the saddle. "We will cross the river just north of where the snake flows." He turned his pony's head and rode off. Bum walked back to where his men lay on the ground. Leo tossed a stick into the fire and said,
"No women, no gold, no nothing. It ain't over yet," Bum said, then smiled.
"What you grinning about?" one of his men asked him.